Tears, tactics and tyres. This is the Alton Park Review.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. We have made it back from a sometimes wet Alton Park.
Yeah, we're back from up to north.
Something we weren't quite expecting going into the weekend was to see the heavens open.
No, obviously going into the weekend it was supposed to be hot and steamy for the whole weekend. And
it certainly was on Saturday, wasn't it?
It was on Saturday, very humid on Saturday, and then Sunday was, in the circumstances, quite a welcomed reduction in temperature, but obviously meant that a lot of what we had said in the preview was complete and utter nonsense, so no changes there.
Oh dear, yeah. We'll get onto the predictions a little bit later, but it's safe to say they didn't go as planned, considering the weather implications. Did you enjoy our trip up to Alton Park?
Yeah, it's a very nice part of the world, very nice circuit, lots to see, very picturesque. Good racing this year as well, lots of incidents to talk about, which makes this show both good and bad, because it means lots of prep needed, but also it means that there's plenty of stuff we can cover. We're not looking for things to talk about, which means we'll probably miss a few things, because otherwise we'll be here for 4 hours.
Yeah, we are going to try and cover the main talking points.
Of course.
There may be bits that we miss, or there may be bits that we didn't actually get replays for once again.
They were pretty good this week on that,
not too bad, to be fair.
Yeah, and actually they also had Louise in a pit lane reporter style at one point to work out what went wrong.
New Ted Kravitz.
I bet he's quaking in his boots. Of course, it was also the final weekend for Steve Ryder, the legendary anchor of the sport. And actually, Napa ran a really nice little tribute on the top of their roof, saying voice of the touring cast, thank you, and all that kind of stuff. And we saw lots of, nice little bits and pieces throughout the, or you haven't because you don't watched it, but there's lots of nice bits and pieces throughout the.
I've seen the like list of thank you messages from all the sort of drivers that have come through the Toker package, as it were, ranging from sort of like Jenson Button, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri,
Jay Humphrey.
Plenty of people in there that wished him well in his retirement, as we do as well.
Yeah, it's fair to say that he walked so others could run, and those who will take over are very much standing on the shoulder of a giant. So happy retirement to Steve Ryder. He's certainly brought us a lot of pleasure over the years in watching him anchor. Not just this, obviously football, rugby, we're both sporting
so
fans. So it's all the best of his retirement. Shall we start with Saturday and qualification then? I'm not going to spend a long time on this because there's lots to get through in the racing. So a few key points just to mention. Dan Rowbottom, a bit of a favourite coming to this maybe for pole, and maybe being at the front, was out in Q1, as were three of the four WSRs. Rainford only just sneaking into the top 12 at the end of the qualifying lap for the six. Sheldon lost all of his lap time because of track limits. So that's why he started at the back on Sunday. Kamish continued his impressive form. He's now been in the top five at all events so far, halfway through the season, this time qualifying.
He's going after that Wingfoot award, mate.
Yeah,
that's what he wants.
Ingram, who would pick up this week's Wingfoot award, absolutely smashed the lap record for pole. And just also to point out, this was Chris Smiley's best qualification for 6 years, qualifying up in the top six. Contrast that with Dan Lloyd, who was excluded from qualifying for failing to get past the post qualification scrutineering, a problem with the exhaust.
A couple of things on that. Ingram's lap, astonishing, nearly half a second quicker than anyone else. Smiley, really unlucky, obviously was fastest in his first qualifying session, fastest in the second qualifying session, fastest in the FP2 as well, and then unluckily missed out to an awesome lap. It put him in good stead for going into Sunday.
Absolutely. So, race one at Alton Park was an incredibly old-school affair with lots of bumps and, should we say, shirty little pieces of passing, particularly by a couple of drivers, which we should get to in a moment. So, it was a dry race. Most of the field opted for softs. Only those on hard were Dobble, Osborne, Rowbottom and Shedden. It was a dry race, but it was still damp and a little bit wet offline. The drivers were saying that on the laps to the grid, there's a lovely dry line, but overtaking would be slightly difficult because there are still big patches of damp across the circuit. We did need an extra lap as well at the start because Leslie stopped before his mark. And rather uncharitably, the commentators just thought he'd stalled it. He hadn't. The drive shaft had fallen out. Louise was able to confirm in her roving pit lane role. I have to say, it's always astonishing to me how often that happens in touring cars, that one's drive shaft will just pop itself out on the way to the grid. And it's normally on the way to the grid as well. Sometimes
considering how highly engineered these cars are as well, yeah, that is quite surprising. I do feel a little bit sorry for the marshals as they had to push him up Deer's Leap and into the pit lane. But yeah, we had another formation lap to get everyone in the right place.
I will say, fair play to Leslie. He was able to open the door and, you know, alert the marshals and the race control people to the problem, because what you don't want is a car that doesn't start, either rolls backwards or gets hit, because
he hadn't actually managed to line up in his group position at that point, which I think kind of helped out the situation.
It did, but obviously he was also quite far back and around the corner, so you could potentially forgive him for being missed. So don't take any chances. And he did well, I think, to particularly Miss Davey as well. To actually, which we didn't mention in the review, we should probably just quickly cover that off, because in the preview, we recorded it before the news broke. So obviously Ronan Pearson, not there, Lewis Huquet, not there for the rest of the season. He's pulled out of the touring cars for the 2025 season, unfortunately, due to personal reasons. Finn Leslie, who has made a little bit of a splash in TCR so far this season, took his place, I believe, just for this weekend. They will have one more driver swap available on that license. We'll have to see what happens there.
It'd be interesting to see who does come into that seat as well. See, there's the issues that Virtue have had earlier with this season with how many drivers they were trying to run. So it'll be interesting to see who takes that over full time. I don't think it'll be Finn Leslie going forward, because I think he will try and complete the year in TCR. It's a nice experience for him to come in this weekend. And even though he had that issue going into race one, they did actually get the car back out on the circuit and he managed to get some more testing laps, which the more laps he can get under his belt, the better he's going to be and the better he's going to feel. And by the end of the weekend, he actually scored points.
He did indeed, yeah. So we'll have to see what happens with that seat as the season progresses. There's no point speculating. I've got time to speculate. So Ingram off the line into the lead, and pretty much he cleared somewhere to be because he was gone. Obviously, his summer holidays
the
booked.
The gap that he pulled on those opening couple of laps, it was ridiculous. It's kind of like the gap that some drivers used to pull when they had the time in F1 before DRS came in. He was well clear of the field and no one was taking that one away from him.
Absolutely. As one Hyundai went well, Smiley went backwards. Both Camish and Sutton passed by Cascades. De Leon, in particular, decided to go back to the 90s this weekend. And the first instance we saw, he was into the back of Osborne, very, very hard into the hairpin. It would be what I would call a push to pass, and he would get a penalty for this after the race as well. And this sort of checked up Osborne's momentum, knocked him down a bit, and then knocked him into the path of Stephen Jelly, who... him and Jelly came together, came out of the hairpin, and Osborne was fired into the barriers. I've watched it back, and it's one of those that I think is, you've not seen it back, to be fair. Osborne does move over a little bit.
Okay.
But I'd also say that it was clumsy by Jelly. It was one of those that you should back out. And I'm personally putting it 60-40 Jelly's fault.
Yeah.
I do think, having looked back a couple of times, that Osborne, he is in front, but I do think he's just moving over. And if, to be fair to Jelly, if you do start to move over, and you potentially a bit slow to spot it, or to be fair, it can happen so quickly, there's not a lot you can do. But also, I think where Jelly was, you can anticipate it slightly better as well.
It felt clumsy when I saw it on the replays while we were there live watching it. And yeah, it's Jelly didn't have a good weekend this weekend.
No, both cars did carry on, which is good.
Yeah, they did.
But we did have to have a safety car for the barriers to be inspected and quickly repaired, as is the safety that is paramount to the racing. Jelly would pit and rejoin. I mean, never news anyway, shrugs, all that kind of stuff. And also during the safety car period, as you've already alluded to, Leslie was able to get back out and get some running in, which was important for him on his debut. A good restart by Ingram, who again, the sales clearly worried about missing that plane because he was gone, 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 gone. And then we had a bit of a problem further back. The Unlimited Motorsport Racing team, which hasn't had the greatest starts to this first half of the season. Hall was roughed up by Patterson at his locks and then ended up having to retire from the race with a broken toe link. I have to say, look naughty by Patterson. Hall is down the inside.
He's ahead. He's ahead as well.
To me, having looked and watched it from an onboard as well, it looks like Patterson just bangs into him personally. I'm stunned he didn't get a penalty for this.
Yeah. From we were viewing at that point of the circuit as well, and it all looked very clumsy. And then we saw the replay, and it did just look like Patterson turned in, clipped the back end. You know how Sutton can judge where the front end of his car is and swoop right in behind. possibly it's a misjudgment.
It didn't even look like he was trying to overtake, though. I'm not saying it was this, because I don't know, but having looked at it, it just looked like it was a bang rather than an attempted overtake. I do wonder what part the team's playing this. Obviously, there was no penalty, and there's been no penalty I can see in the stewards' room that's been given to Patson afterwards. Then who's going to protest? Because then they aren't going to protest their own driver.
Yep.
And I think Max Hall will feel quite aggrieved about that one, I have to say. Although Patson might say that's 1-1 now for Brands Hatch.
Yeah, Max Hall might be also saving up the money to make sure that he's got enough to repair the car going on throughout the rest of the season.
He's not had a good first half of the season, has Hall. I think it's important to remember he's very young as well, so he's still developing not only as a driver but as a person. But I also feel that on this particular occasion, I don't think he's done anything wrong at all.
No,
I think he's been clattered into, and it's unfortunate that it's done. The damage that it's done. Cook and Dorlin would start to get together as well. This was quite an interesting battle, actually, throughout the race one. Dorlin really had the pace in that top sort of 6, 7, 8 cars, and Cook just couldn't get past him. And the pair of them decided to try what can only be described as a little bit of barrier surfing coming through the pit onto the pit straight, where Cook tried to get past. They kind of locked together.
As they started to veer towards the pit barrier, they're able to unlock themselves from each other and separate. But yeah, a bit of robustness between Dorlin and Cook.
It's not something I've seen in a saloon car before either. Normally you see it in like single seaters and stuff like that. But to see it happen in a saloon car is rather strange.
Yeah, it's unusual for sure. But they say they were able to get themselves sorted again, which is good for them. There we go. By lap 7, everything has sort of settled down a little bit in the race. I've seen that a couple of times this year in the touring cars. That the opening few laps are quite action-packed. Then we go into a little bit of a settling period. And then towards the end of the race, things start to ramp up again. And they did, because De Leon decided that he was a bit bored of things being a bit processional, a little bit nice and a little bit easy, and decided that he was going to push to pass on double, an old school move. Some love this. For me, it's not particularly good driving. He was in the stewards room a lot at the end of the race for his behaviour.
Yeah, racking up the points a little bit now as well, isn't he, with the indiscretion, shall we say, that he keeps picking up from the stewards.
Yep. Dorlin was then sent over the chicane during his ongoing battles with Cook. I have to say, he's starting to find his feet at Toyota Doyle, and he's certainly impressed me the most out of those drivers. Chilton would then get by Morgan, which is a lovely little move at the chicane, nipped right down the inside at the last minute. Obviously, they gave each other space, as you'd expect from teammates. And then De Leon again decided that he hadn't had enough action in this race, but looked a bit bored of racing, decided he wanted to go bowling, and decided that the best option for him was to send Aaron Taylor Smith flying into the hairpin, which then hit Moffat, and to be fair to Moffat, a completely innocent party, wiped out by...
Absolutely bizarre move.
Yeah, it's just a really poor move, to be honest with you.
I'm not quite sure where he thought he was going to go, because there was never going to be a gap opening up there.
Well, he thinks there's a gap opening from the inside. There isn't. No. And in doing so, he's just sent Aaron Taylor Smith careering into Moffat. Yep. I'm surprised, to be fair, that neither had bad damage, because a fairly big, hefty hit. Both were able to get going, but obviously Moffat, who was having a steady race, I wouldn't say he was performing fantastically, but a steady race, and then that completely wiped out. But so that's not his fault, which will be deeply frustrating, I'm sure. And then Cook would finally get past Dorlin on lap 12, ending what was a very fun battle. And then at the end, the big controversy, if you will, Sutton, not content with third and not content with having to go on a half tyre. And obviously had a little bit of an insider at the Met Office to see what's happening later on with the raining and stuff. Decided he was going to swap out, and he swapped with Smiley, let Smiley catch up, slotted back in front of Chilton.
Now, to be fair to you, you did call it a couple of laps from the end. Mm-hmm. I thought, he's quite a long way ahead of the Hyundais. And yeah, to see him just literally lift off the throttle coming over onto the final lap, just completely give away all the advantage that he had. It was a risky one because it could have gone wrong.
Yes, yeah.
And there was a small gap to slot into because Smiley and Chilton were racing really quite closely at that point as well.
Smiley, who said that in his interview afterwards, he said that he could have easily finished sixth. But that's why I said I'm not going to say no to a podium. So I understand that. Now, where do you stand on this? I think it's tactical and it's fine. Some people are very angry about this. And my personal rule thought, without getting the soapbox out too early, is if you're going to have stupid rules, you're going to get stupid moves. And whether this is stupid or not, or farcical rules, you're going to get farces like this. And this is what you're going to have. You're going to mandate and have to use the worst tyre. And Cambridge was very vocal about this in his interview afterwards, that the tyre is so bad that it's pointless. If you went to medium, fair enough. But the going from soft to hard is pointless because it's so, so bad.
Because there is such a small difference in points between third and fourth, I can completely understand why Sutton's done it. And tactically, I can completely understand why he's done it, especially looking forward to what the weather was going to be doing later that day. Yes, it's still a judgment, a risk call, whether you're going to get that rain later on in the day. Yes, we did. But we could have quite easily not, and then he would have plummeted through the field in that race as well.
Or maybe not. As we'd find out in race two with Ingram, although we'll get to that in a moment. Yeah. I do think, let's say, if you're going to have this tyre rule, I say it all the time on the podcast, fine, but let teams decide when they use it.
Yep. So to round up then for the end of race one, it was Ingram from Camish from Smiley due to that move.
Winning independence as well.
Yes. Sutton from Chilton, from Morgan, from Hill, Proctor, Cook and Dorlin.
Jack Sears winner for the race.
Followed by Rainford, Lloyd, Aaron Taylor-Smith, Dan Rowbottom and Aidan Moffat.
Correct. Yes.
Thank you.
De Leon would have a penalty applied to him for race two, however, so he would drop down the order for that because he was given a penalty, which I'll cover off in penalty corner later on. Should we go?
Plenty of them this weekend as well.
For him.
Again.
Yeah, for him. Right, should we get straight on to race two then?
Yeah, so race two, obviously, top three would be starting on a hard tyre, and I'm not actually sure. I don't think anyone else chose a hard tyre on the grid. So we were kind of expecting Sutton to charge through, as he pretty much did. There was a fairly level start from Ingram and Camish, and it was all fairly neat and tidy until it got down to Knickerbrook, where they all bunched up a little bit more.
Yeah, Sutton was second by Cascade, so he was already out of the firing line for us behind and was setting about trying to get on Ingram. A good move by Sutton out the hairpin on Ingram as well, where he left it late, went tight. Did run Ingram a little bit wide, a bit naughty, but again, I think just about on the limit. Ingram had plenty of time to get out of it as well. And I also think to myself, are you finding it that hard? There was enough of a gap behind as well. He wasn't going to lose place. I mean, there's a point where Camish and Smiley both got shuffled back down the order because of being close to other cars. That wasn't really on here. So I'm surprised Ingram fought it as hard as he did.
Yeah, Smiley got shuffled back to sixth by the end of the first lap and really struggled on that opening couple of laps with the hard tyre. Camish less so. It was actually after the safety car restart that we get in this race that he was then shuffled back. But Morgan got past Camish nice and early on and was setting on up the road after Ingram.
Yeah, he sort of followed Sutton through on Ingram a little bit. Obviously, Ingram had lost the a little bit of momentum being pushed wide at the hairpin, was able to nip through by the chicane. But again, Ingram won't be fighting that particularly hard. I would also be hoping that Morgan could perhaps go after Sutton and make a difference. Halstead was off with a problem. He was roughed up by Patterson. Again, I'm shocked this wasn't a penalty because Patterson, again, pretty much from what I saw, did what he did to Hall on Halstead.
Felt like a lazy move and sent Halstead into a half spin at Knickerbrook. And then he got back going, but plenty of seconds behind the rest of the field. And then Sutton, Morgan and Chilton had all got through on Ingram at this point. I think Ingram pretty much let Chilton through.
Yes.
With the remit of Gorn teammates go and make it awkward for Sutton. But I was actually quite surprised that the top three didn't then rocket away.
Yeah, they didn't rocket away. They were helped by what had happened next, which was Dan Lloyd going off in a big way up the hill. Now, he blames Cook. Harvey blames the tyres and Cook wants nothing to do with it. So basically, going through the chicane, Lloyd does clip the tyres very, very slightly. Okay. And Harvey was convinced that broke something on the car. And to the point where when they asked Matt Neal what happened and Matt said Lloyd lost it, Harvey was like, once he's seen the replays, he'll have a different view, I'm sure. No, I don't think he will. I don't think he will, Tim, on this one. So Tim was basically steadfast that he clipped it. And he had clipped the tyres. There's no doubt about that. That he perhaps broken a toe link on the car or something like that. No, because we saw what happens when you break a toe link earlier. Of Hall, you don't get that far up the hill.
No,
at that speed.
You feel that instantly and the back end tries to twitch out. This was just a good run up Clay Hill.
Yep.
Trying to get the run on Cook and went to the inside as you go up there and
hit the grass. Hit the wet grass.
That Cook didn't give him much room.
Well, he reckons that Cook squeezed him. I disagree entirely. Lloyd was nowhere near Cook, really.
No.
Not to put a move
not
on
even,
him.
Not even alongside.
No, not close to being alongside. Not even bumper to bumper. It was still a fair... Okay, he was gaining, but it's still a fair gap. And he claims that Cook squeezed him onto the grass. No, I think personally Lloyd misjudged the gap.
Yep.
Got onto the grass, and then that veered him off at speed into the barriers.
I've never seen a car snap like that.
I think the wet grass. And also, we did see throughout the circuit, there were quite big curbs. Mm-hmm. So he's gone... And this is what Matt Neal said, that he's hit a curb, and he's hit the grass, and it snapped. And I'm going to go with Neil's judgment on this. What I will say is that Lloyd, even in the car afterwards, sat there with his head in his hand, said, cook, squeeze me. And you could pick that up on the mics that are in the car for this weekend. I have to say, for me, no. Cook's done nothing. In my opinion, Cook's done nothing wrong, and it's a misjudgment, I have to say.
So, something that was quite entertaining was both drivers were interviewed on the grid for race three as well. And Cook basically said, I was going to let him through. It wasn't in my race.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very much, I don't want anything to do with it, really.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Drivers will get blamed for things all the time. I really don't see how Cook was at fault of this. And obviously, he didn't get a penalty afterwards. Right. And maybe when Lloyd has watched it back after the adrenaline's finished, he might feel differently. See what happens on his YouTube channel, I guess.
As a result, the safety car came out because there was a decent amount of barrier that needed replacing, not any ARCO or anything like that, but the tyre stacks and the Rectocel barriers.
Yeah, I do.
I'm quite surprised by how well the Hyundai stood up to that impact.
It went inside impact, which helped, but it was still a big, big hit. I do also think they should have perhaps red flagged it when it became clear that this was not going to be a quick job, because we had lost a lot of laps to the safety car, which helped Ingram a lot because it helped those on the car tyres stabilise and
helped me a lot as well.
Helped you a lot, yeah, in the safety car prediction. But it certainly helped those on hard tyres, A, not be shuffled back down the pack because you can't overtake under safety car, but also keep a bit of life in those tyres as well. Once we got around sort of five laps, potentially beyond what you can add on, surprised they didn't look at potentially red flagging it.
It's something that we question whilst watching.
Well, it also means you can give the marshals the time to do it properly without feeling got a rush and worry about cars coming round, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, the recovery was quite quick of the car.
Yeah.
The barrier took time, as you expect it to do. Perhaps these are the situations where red flag might work better.
So, excuse me. Before that, Cook had managed to get through on Smiley. Smiley was gradually getting shuffled through the pack as well. That brought the safety car out with Lloyd going off. And then on the restart, Hill, Cook and Proctor all got past Camish. It seemed like Camish couldn't get the tyres working straight away once again.
And again, that new rolling start of the safety car doesn't help. They're all bunched together and he was obviously on a lot slower tyre.
One thing I must say about the rolling starts for the safety car this weekend is it felt like there was a very short amount of time from when the lights went off to when the safety car came in for the field to actually close back up.
This was picked up a lot.
Noted in commentary.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Particularly in race three when people were doing different tyres, because you're supposed to only be within two car lengths of the car in front, but obviously that wasn't possible at points this weekend. Yeah.
No, some drivers were way off the back as well. And then we had Rainford going off at Old Hall. He was helped along the way, though.
Yeah, Shedden dived down the inside. Only got one replay. Looks like he made contact. I think it's a bit optimistic. I'm surprised he didn't get a penalty, personally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't. Rainford did very well too. He went in, spun the car around and got going again with damage. What I will say as well is this comes back to a red flag thing, though, because they then covered this section of the course with yellows the rest of the race because there was damage to the barrier, which I think they didn't want to scramble another safety car. Had you done the red flag earlier, they would then potentially been able to use a safety car.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's one of those. In the end, by the end of this race, we had about three parts of the circuit covered by yellows, which means that you can't overtake.
Yeah, I was quite impressed by how well the BMW stood up to that. It looked like a hefty impact, but he was able to just drive away and continue with his race. At this point, Ingram's keeping really nice pace ahead of Hill. Not overly defensive driving either.
He was helped by the fact that Proctor was on the back of Hill. This is really where having a teammate that can battle it out the front helps, because every time Hill started to put a bit of pressure on Ingram, Proctor would be able to get that bit close and he could start putting the pressure on Hill. He'll have to drop off Ingram. And I think this is one of the main reasons that Ingram was able to stay where he was. It will be concerning for the other teams, particularly BMW, they weren't fast enough to get past the car on hard tyres, on soft tyres, in dry conditions. That will be a concern. Obviously, Proctor wasn't there to get past Ingram anyway. And to be fair, he might have held position behind him or had that happen. But yeah, that is the advantage of having teammates up the road and teammates behind you that can really help you out throughout the race.
Cook was also getting in on that battle, so it was pretty much four cars for fourth. And then Robot was showing some really good pace behind them, catching up to them almost like half a second a lap, it felt at times. You could see him visibly closer each lap that he came down Cascades. And then managed to get onto the back of them as well, didn't he?
Yeah, and Proctor had a few issues with a bit of rubbing bodywork, which meant he lost a bit of pace and would then get passed by, as you say, both Cook and Rowbottom.
And then we had Aaron Taylor-Smith, Toyota woes once again, an engine failure pretty much going off at the same point that Lloyd did earlier on, parked it up by a marshal's post, which meant no need for a safety car.
I have to say, we give Tim Harvey a little bit of pelters at times. Fair play to him. On the first shot, he said that's exactly where Lloyd had gone off. And Addison was like, no, it's not. But to be fair, and literally half a glance, he's like, yep, that's the same place as Lloyd. Yeah. So fair play, Harvey. You got that one spot on.
Yep. Unfortunate for Aaron Taylor-Smith because he was having a decent weekend up until that point. And his season definitely isn't going as smoothly as it did last year, is it?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. It's not been a good start to the season for him. They've got there's signs of life for Toyota we're going to get into, particularly also think of Dorlin as well, who I think has had a decent enough start to the season. And then towards the end of this race, the rain started to fall particularly hard, but it was too little too late really from the rain's point of view, because
about 5 minutes after you said, yeah. Oh yeah, we're not going to get rain.
Well, not in the race, we didn't effectively, didn't affect the race, which meant that Sutton was able to take the race win from Morgan from Chilton, Ingram finishing fourth on hards. Potentially, Sutton's plan backfired. I do think the safety car really did help Ingram in this race as well. Yeah. He had good pace, don't get me wrong, but that did help, I think, keeping, we only really got three quarters of the race, if that. Hill finished fifth. Rowbottom up from 14th on the grid to finish sixth, which is a good drive for him. Cook, Proctor, Shedden, Camish in hard in 10th. Doble, the winning independent driver. Osborne, the winning Jack Sears driver. Dorlin, Smiley, and then De Leon. Rainford was then later disqualified for overboost, which I still blows my mind that they have any form of power over that.
I'm not quite sure how that all works out, because I would imagine it is some sort of electrical system where you go, right, set that number to that, and that's how much you get. But we've seen it happen a couple of times this season.
Absolutely. And then Steve Ryder was given the privilege to pull the number out of the pocket, out the bowl rather, by Ash Sutton. A nice classy move from Ash, to be fair. And he picked out number 9 and got it wrong because he thought he put Dan Camish on pole, which was quite funny.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah. He boldly went, I've now put Camish on pole. And he's like, sorry. And so the one and only chance he had to do it, and he got it wrong, which proves he is obviously human like the rest of us.
Yeah, so it would be Shedden taking pole for race 3, and interesting happenings in between that with the weather.
Yes, we'll get on to that after the break.
With the summer break now upon us, we're not going anywhere. We're going to have plenty of shows for you over the summer half term.
Indeed, the touring cars may be on a long break now, but if you need your touring car fixed through the months of July and to accompany you, or maybe on your summer holiday flight, maybe by the beach, or maybe for those nice long walks through the countryside this summer, make sure you are subscribed to, liking, following, all of that sort of stuff on all of our socials. That's YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok, and make sure you're subscribed on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Castbox, or wherever else you may get your podcast from.
Yeah, and thank you for all the interaction we've had already this season. We love hearing your comments, and can't wait to get into the second half of the season. Right then, we'll start with race 3, and the heavens had opened.
Yeah, it's a really weird one for race 3, because the heavens had opened. It had really disrupted the F4s previously. From rewatching on the television box, it looks like even though it was declared a wet race after the first red flag, some people still went out on slicks, which meant they had to red flag it again. Which basically cut that short. I
did wonder what was going on.
Yeah, it was all very chaotic and confusing. And to be honest, I didn't watch it in any great detail because I wanted to get on to the touring cars for the purpose of this. But yeah, it looked a bit of a faff. It did rain. It did rain very, very hard. Mm. But by the time the touring cars came out, and it was wet when they did their outlap to the grid. But by the time they actually started the race, it was drying. It wasn't dry enough to start on
the
sticks.
The air was dry. Mm. There was a bit of a breeze about it as well, which we know helps clear water from the track.
Yep.
And Sutton, I think, also said on the grid that the surface underneath is still going to be warm from the sun that had been on it for the rest of the day. So it was likely to be a race that would go from wet conditions into dry conditions. However, no one took the gamble on the grid.
No, and I'm not surprised necessarily. Well, I'm slightly surprised that we didn't see anybody further back try it. However, to be fair, I would say they made the right call, because as the race went on, one person did go on to softs and slicks, but they, you know, they finished well on the road, but they didn't get particularly far up either. They needed a couple more laps, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so as a result of this, many drivers got away with not running the hard tyre this weekend, including Sutton. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it was a risk to take, but one that eventually sort of paid off.
I will say there's a slight advantage to those who, for an Ingram or Robot, for example, who had did run both tyres, mm-hmm. is they've now got a spare pair of softs that they can roll over for the rest of the season, which yep. means they can potentially run an extra pair in qualifying somewhere. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Sutton, I think, would rather have that than the tyres in the bank, to be honest with you, than to have those extra points at the top.
Yeah, so Shedden would go from pole position, and Proctor made a really poor start.
Yeah, but just before that, Aaron Taylor-Smith on the grid, they were not able to get his car repaired in time for race number three, unfortunately. But yeah, you say Proctor, terrible start, really bogged down and was absolutely swamped.
Four places. Hill and Rowbottom decided they wanted to park in the pit wall as well, by the look of it.
Yeah.
They were hip and shoulder, and I did think at one moment Hill was going to lose
that. Yeah, I did.
And collide with the concrete barrier.
Yeah.
So very lucky to get away with that. And then we got all the way down to Nickbrook once again before we saw the first bit of action. Cook going straight on in the wet conditions.
Yeah.
Something that we've seen a lot of the minis do earlier on.
He did have a throttle problem in race three. That's why at points he was really slow.
Yep.
He said that the car was doing some really weird things in race three.
That makes a lot of sense as to why he obviously went off later on and then came out to do almost some sighting laps.
Yep.
Hill managed to get past him for second at that point, and then was off chasing after Shedden. Chris Smiley, unfortunately, at the same point had an electrical issue, had to stop at that chicane, left the car there, which
parked in the swervy bit to go, but safe enough.
Which was unfortunate for him, especially as how his weekend had started. And then Morgan was in strife as well and had to go into the pits. I'm not 100% sure as to why.
No, because he didn't swap to slick tyres, so I'm not entirely sure why either. And then we saw Cook off at the final corner into the gravel, outbraked himself, did get it going again in the wet gravel, but again, probably plays into the throttle issue that he was experiencing.
He was very lucky to get that going again because it looked like it had dug in at first, and then he managed to get up on top of the gravel and get going.
Yeah,
and
weird.
Drag a lot of gravel out with him.
Yeah, I was going to say, weirdly, it's easier to get going in wet gravel than it is dry gravel because obviously it doesn't stick together and suck you in as much as dry gravel does.
Yeah. And then lap three, down at Cascades, Hall and Moffitt got together. Now, we didn't see much of what happened here, but there were penalties handed out after the race, more severely for Hall than Moffitt. But it sounds like a bit of an argy-bargy and a tit-for-tat sort of thing, but Hall... It doesn't look good on the whole from the report from the steward's office.
No, Paul's got a bigger penalty, which suggests, as you say, we've not seen a replay for this, but suggests that Moffat did his transgression first, and then Hall's reacted and done a bit of a response. That's how it looks from the nature of the penalty going out. Of course, it might also be that the stewards have given a harsh penalty to Hall because this is not the first time he's been that in front of possible. Them, which is also a possibility. So about replays, we can't know for sure.
No, that was unfortunately one of the things that I'd really like to have seen this weekend because of the penalty that's around it.
I will say, actually, to be fair, we've bemoaned replays a lot. The cameras are a lot better this weekend. They got a lot of the action shown, which was really good.
Camish then had a move into Old Hall on Proctor with slight contact, very similar to what happened with Shedden and Rainford, but they both managed to get away with it. But Sutton then got the run on Camish to get past, and then later got the pass on Proctor down into the hairpin. Just seemed to outdrive him.
Yeah, absolutely. Further back, Ingram was struggling initially and was sent across his lops after a little bit of a clumsy coming together in the pack. It wouldn't be the first time. He did sort of straight line that chicane a couple of times during the race. He did say afterwards that they'd set the car up a bit too intermediate for the conditions. And as the track dried, his car actually got better. So potentially in the end, it all worked out. But yeah, you have to say as well, it's the first time really there's been a small chink in the Hyundai armour and getting something wrong for Ingram's car. He's dominated so well, you know, the rest of the day as well.
It was really difficult to guess how that race was going to develop. Yes. And he kind of went halfway between, which is why he lost so much ground at the start.
The other thing to remember as well is that they have to allow for the ride hikes to deteriorate on these wet tyres. That effectively, once you're running a wet tyre on a dry circuit, they are becoming blocks and just wearing, which is going to keep lowering the car. There's that to consider as well.
De Leon didn't have to worry about that too much, though, because on lap five, he was the first driver to come in for the hard tyre.
Way too early.
It was way too early.
Yeah, this is something as Dan Lloyd's done on the grid as well, is that he started on the wets because his only option otherwise was to run the hards, and that'd be pointless anyway. So you might as well run the slicks and be, you might as well run the wets than the slicks. So I'm surprised that because Dillon only had the hards that he came in and did that. If he had a pair of softs, I completely get it. But for the hards, it didn't make any sense to me.
Not for me.
And also his pit crew weren't ready. So he clearly decided at the 11th hour he was doing this. Or
that was bizarre.
Yeah,
wasn't
just
it?
Because it's not an F1 style pit change for touring cars. It's a big event, isn't it?
He came in first of all and they picked up a wet tyre because they thought he had a puncture or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously went for the hard tyre.
And in the end, he actually lost at least, I think it was two laps he lost.
Yeah, he did.
Which is, by that point, it's pointless putting the hards on because unless the track went dry, you were stuffed.
You mentioned Lloyd there. He managed to outbreak himself down into the hairpin and actually had to go around the whole island loop.
Which is nice. There's a nice lake down there. You know, you can see the sights. The park's pretty.
It's just compounded his weekend of issues.
Yeah, if you told him at that point, as he was driving around the other hairpin at the end, you're going to win the independence in this race, mate. Boy.
Bonkers, that. Absolutely bonkers. And as you said, Ingram was struggling at this point and again went straight on at Hislop's and Nickelbrook. Paul was then off at Lodge on lap six. Him and Patterson fell down the order, but there was no replay of actually what happened.
No, I'm not sure what happened on that one. It could have been anything, to be fair.
The way that they both fell down the order together kind of means to me that they might have come together once again.
Or shuffled. Yeah, it's difficult to know.
But the safety car was brought out as a result because he was fully stuck in there. He wasn't able to claw it out like Cook did.
You were very happy as well because Jelly was doing very well at this point, and you backed him to get points, and he hadn't done it in race one, he hadn't done it in race two, but because the rest of the field are dropping like flies, and Hauser didn't even come out, nor did Aaron Taylor-Smith, so that's immediately two less to get. You're running well, and then, as we're standing at the sort of run down to the chicane, where's Jelly gone? We can't quite see over to the other bit of, the slightly bit that's below, what do you call that? Below us. Jelly was parked up into a wall.
It's fair to say, and I think you sent me the video of him after the weekend, just sitting disconsolately on his truck, or in his truck, should I say, going, what more can I do? That was just a weekend to forget, so I won't be backing him again. At this point, Ingram was down to 12th. Sutton's in 4th at the moment, so it looked like it was going to be a decent points haul for Sutton over Ingram. And then, one thing I would have to say, there was completely pointless replay of Sutton's practice start.
Yes.
I've got no idea why we saw that. It would have been lovely to see why Hall went off.
I have a feeling they might have meant to play that one and got it wrong. But I'd say, to be fair...
confused Tim as well, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Given the awfulness of some of the camera work at Thruxton, this was a lot better. So I will just temper that slightly.
Oh dear. But Shevin made a really good restart and was comfortably off up the road. Robot and tried to move on hill on lap 10. It was optimistic and didn't quite come off.
Nope. They've got a bit of history, those two, as well.
Yeah,
so.
just a small amount.
Yeah.
And then Chilton arrived at Hislop's with his bonnet up, consequently having hit the back of Mikey Doble, sent him off to the right through Nickelbrook.
Yes.
And there was a substantial amount of damage on the front of that Hyundai.
Yeah, Chilton got a penalty for this. It was, I think he'll hold his hands up. He got the braking wrong, potentially locked up in the damp conditions with the dying tyres and just rear-ended Doble completely.
One thing I was quite amazed by, looking at the accident now and the impact that it was, Doble couldn't actually then move the car once he'd landed it and nosed into the barrier.
Yeah, it depends what else is broken. It was a hefty hit, wasn't it? You know, so if he's knocked out the rear tracking arms or even a toe link.
So that was on lap 11, a safety car out once again. Mm-hmm. Very popular use this weekend. At which point, Patterson felt it was the right time to come into the pits for soft
tyres. Which made sense, because under safety car conditions, it was certainly drying.
Yep.
That was a good, I think that's a good decision. I'm surprised nobody else tried it as well, particularly if they're further back down. I mean, I'm not suggesting Shevin comes in for it, but if you're...
I think Morgan came in and he had to put on a hard tyre as well, which it didn't really make much difference because he was already down at the back and it's the wrong tyre to be on. But yeah, I am surprised more drivers didn't do it.
But I suppose, again, if the only option left was hard, and let's be honest, the only people that could have gone in for soft were Patterson, were Rowbottom.
Yep.
Was Shedden.
Ingram.
And was Ingram and Osborne, because they'd all run the hards already. Maybe Osborne, maybe you could say. Surprised Osborne didn't go in for it. But then equally, he was in and around his Jack Sears competitors at the time. Do you risk running, you know, chucking that away?
At which point, Hamilton had gone off at Old Hall and hit the rear of the car. Mm-hmm. Fairly substantial suspension damage. I don't think they actually pulled a safety car for that.
No, they just covered it by yellows.
Which, yeah, they kind of used up their safety car allocation by that point in the race.
I think you may have missed a bit as well, which is why we'll go back where Ingram decided he was going to be a steward for the day after he cut the chicane following contact from Dorlin. And then for half a lap, carried on in front of Dorlin and then decided to let him back through, which is sensible because why fight it in the steward's room when you can sort it on the track? But sensible move by Ingram.
Yeah, I mean, he gave it back in time. I think he was making sure there was enough room to then swap back in behind Dorlin. But yeah, he then managed to grab two places coming out of Nickbrook as Dorlin and Rainford squabbled once again. Dorlin was in some good action this weekend, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, Dorlin, I'd say he's certainly been, for me, the best Toyota driver. I know Shedden took the win in this race, spoiler alert. but actually, for the half the season as a whole, Dorlin, for me, has been the most impressive in that Toyota outfit.
Yeah, so with three laps to go, Paterson tyres have finally started to kick in, but it was too late at this point. He went fastest, I think it was about 3 or 4 seconds faster than everyone else, and then started to reel them in. But with only three laps left, it didn't leave much to then benefit from.
No, and the field was too spread out as well at that point as well. Hill would then, pushing to get past Shedden, pushed too hard, lost the car, and drove off over the grass, which bumped him back down the order, allowed Sutton into second and Robot him up into third.
Yeah, he lost five places as a result of that. Just lost the back end going down into Cascades on the wetter outside line. At which point, Ingram had got up back to fourth and was moving quickly.
Yeah, the race came to him.
It really did. And they weren't any sort of like outrageous moves. They were just methodical almost. Paterson managed to get three places on the final lap.
Yeah.
However, he was then excluded afterwards.
He was indeed. So the finishing order was Shedden took his race win, the first since 2022 at Croft.
He's 53rd.
53rd for car number 52. Sutton followed him home in second. It all worked out for him in the end.
Indeed.
Rowbottom in third, continuing his purple patch and run of podiums. Ingram fourth. Proctor, another impressive weekend for him.
So impressive.
And I do wonder, I'm not saying he'd be a championship contender, but I do wonder where he'd be if he'd start the season because he looks so good in
that
car.
He's up to 14th in the championship now.
Camish finished behind Proctor, then Hill, Dorlin, Jack Sears winner, ahead of Charles Rainford and Osborne. Those all sort together in the Jack Sears. Moffat at least scored points on what was otherwise a disappointing weekend for him. Paterson, the winning independent driver on the road, but was later disqualified. Leslie scoring points on his debut, fair play to him. Lloyd finishing in the end, the winning independent. And De Leon.
The only independent.
Left. Yeah, he was the only independent left. De Leon rounded out the top 15, and Morgan would inherit a point for obviously when Paterson was disqualified. So let's do penalty corner. Then we'll do everything else and then final four. So very quickly, race one. De Leon was given a reprimand and 2 points for an incident involving Moffat and Aaron Taylor-Smith. So that was the bowling incident, as we discussed. He was also given a 10-second penalty for colliding with Dobble. That was the push to pass I mentioned earlier on. And Aaron Taylor-Smith was given a reprimand and 2 penalty points for colliding with De Leon. I didn't actually see this back. I presume this was prior to the bowling incident, as it would be harsh to penalise him for being the bowling ball. In race two, Rainford was disqualified for overboost. I still find this astonishing that it's in the driver's control. That seems daft, but there we go. And Leslie was given a verbal warning for contact with Hamilton. Didn't see it. Don't know what happened. Okay. Race three, Paterson was disqualified for failing the ride height. Not to be unexpected, if you just set the car up for the wet and you put the slicks on.
Do you know, it wasn't even down to that. I think it was an exhaust that had dropped down.
Oh, like Lloyd in qualifying.
Yeah.
That's harsh because that's affected. I know rules are rules, but it really isn't affecting the car, is it? If you're low at the front, you're affecting the car. The exhaust is hanging off. That's, come on.
I know.
Chilton was given a reprimand and 2 points for the collision of Doble. Moffat was given a reprimand and 2 points for a collision with Hall. We didn't see it. And Hall was given a three-place grid penalty and 3 penalty points for a collision and gaining an advantage on Moffat. Again, we didn't see this particularly.
No.
Those were the penalties.
Yes. Yeah, an array of penalties.
Yes. Did you want to get into driver awards first before predictions?
Yeah, we'll do some awards first of all.
Mm-hmm. That gives me time to get the predictions up, so thank you.
So we go through the awards each weekend. We have driver of the weekend, villain of the weekend, surprise good and surprise bad. I think we're probably going to agree on driver of the weekend.
Okay.
Ashley Sutton.
Yes.
Yes. He played it really well with the tyres this weekend. Yes, you could say he got a little bit lucky with the rain in race three. We've been looking at the weather forecast, so played it really well and excellent results. Increased the lead at the top of the championship.
Yeah, I'm going to get onto that in my final thoughts, but we'll save it for now. Your villain of the week, I'm agreeing with some, your villain of the weekend.
Ooh, villain. There's a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
Jelly's fairly obvious for me.
Well, for you, yes.
Just because he had an absolute weekend to forget. And he really royally screwed me in the...
He's my driver of the day.
Is he really? Funny that. Yeah, I'm going to go for Jelly.
Yeah, I'm going for Unlimited Motorsport. Again, contact between the teammates. They've got to have a reset over the summer because
they've been... This is not the first time it's happened. And for Hall, again, it's not necessarily all of his fault. I will say race one. But again, it's a weekend where he's only finished one of the races. For Patterson, okay... Unlucky what happened in race three in the exhaust, but scrappy in the other races. I'm not saying that Cooper is good enough to run at the front, but I do think when you get conditions like race three, you have to maximise the leveler, which is the wet.
We saw Nick do it at Donington in those sort of conditions.
Yeah, one that got away, I think.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get on to surprise good now. Yours?
Yeah, I'm going for James Dorling. That's back to back. He's did well at Thruxton. He's done well here. Had good pace in qualifying, had good pace in the race, won two of the three Jaxes, and won the Jaxes overall this weekend. Finished all three races as well, which is vital for the Jaxes competition. So, yeah, he's impressing me. And take Shepherd's win out of it, which I know is slightly hard to do.
Yep.
But for me, out of the four drivers, he's been the most impressive.
Yeah, I think I'm going back to back as well. I'm going to go for Proctor again. I really didn't expect him to be on the pace that he is. And he's consistently there with Morgan, with Chilton. And we saw this weekend helping Ingram out.
He looks so comfortable, doesn't he? He looks so comfortable. Something's been away for so long.
Yes, okay, he's driven the car before, but there are a lot of different regulations now to the last time he drove it. And also to be practically chucked in at the deep end, having been, as far as I know, away from racing for a couple of seasons. Doing very well.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that one. And surprise bad, I'm going for Mikey Doble. I know race three, obviously he had the contact from Chilton and you can't help that, but if we're being honest, didn't really have the pace in qualifying, didn't have the pace in either the races. Okay, I know those he ran the hard tyre in, but we've seen better from Doble this season so far. I just think this is the first time we've seen this year. The car struggle might be the wrong word, but he's done so well in the opening four races and this was his performance here was conspicuous in it wasn't the heights we've seen it the rest of the season.
I am going to go for it's more of a surprise unlucky bad. Dan Lloyd, he's been so unlucky this weekend took the winning independent in the final race, but only by default. He just seemed to be in the action in the wrong way this weekend.
Yeah, I must have said earlier, if you're being disqualified because your exhaust is hanging low, we all know that doesn't affect the car in any positive way, but rules is rules, as they say.
Unfortunately.
Right, prediction time then. None of us got the pole position right. I went for Jake Hill, you went for Dan Camish. You were slightly close, well, a lot closer, but close is not good enough. You did get a point for a race winner. You went for Sutton. Your other two didn't come in, though, in Lloyd and Rowbottom. Maybe Rowbottom... To be fair, had good pace of times, but
he did.
His qualifying let him down, unfortunately, on the Saturday.
I wasn't expecting him to go out that early in qualifying.
I don't think he was either. No. I went for Hill, Camish and Moffat as race winners. None of those really close. So, yeah, fair play. But I did get the Jack Sears right. I did go for James Dorling. If you listen to the preview, you would have known I went for Ronan Pearson, but obviously he didn't sit this weekend. So Sam, very graciously... agreed to let me change driver, but only if it was another Toyota one. So it was between him and Leslie. I went for Dorling and it's paid off.
It has, yeah. And I think I said to you on the day, if I'd allowed you a free range of the Jack Sears drivers to choose, you wouldn't have gone for a Toyota driver, would you?
No, we did a bit of live reacting, if you will, for race two. If you want to see that, by the way, drop a comment down below because the comments really help the YouTube algorithm. So let us know that you want to see it and we will release the footage. It's that simple. You get something... in return for giving us something.
Yeah, full race reaction as the action was going on.
I was Tim, you was David. There was even some fan interaction as well, i.e. my partner asking lots of questions. But if you want to see that footage, then let us know. As I say, all you've got to do is comment down below saying release the footage or words to that effect, and we will get that sorted.
We will.
You went for Rainford and the Jacks here. So one all on the sort of the racing predictions. Then into the general ones for the weekend. I went for Ingram to outscore Sutton. Sutton outscored Ingram by, he's extended his lead at the top of the championship. Yes. So, yep, he's outscored Ingram this weekend. I think by 2 points he's extended at the top. So
at least, yeah.
Yep. Hall to finish all three races.
Everyone on social media thought that was a bold call from you. Turns out they were right.
Yeah. And each race have a different independent winner. Now, I will admit, I was clenching in race three because they were dropping like flies. I'm ahead of had to have a quick sort of rule debate by the side of the tractor. What happens if no independent driver finishes? I would not have got the point. Obviously, we had Smiley, Doble and Patterson win on the road, and then Lloyd took the trophy for the independent in race three. So I was able to get the point for that. You went for Michael Doble to be the winning independent.
No.
Jelly to score points.
Definitely not.
And Toyo to a top six finish. Now, I gave you a lot of mocking for this. And to be fair, until Shevin won the race, it wasn't looking good for you. But
Dorlin was there or thereabouts, wasn't he? He was right on the verge.
He was there or thereabouts, but I think Shevin certainly saved you in race three. That is for sure.
Indeed, yes.
We also did a general one. Each weekend we do a general track-specific one. And here we went for laps behind the safety car. I went for six. You went for seven. You were closer. I believe overall it was 11, I think, from memory. But
not in the end.
You weren't spot on, but you were closest. So you get a point, which means that in the overall standings, the scores have changed.
Halfway point.
It's close. It's close to the top. It's like Ingram and Sutton. It's you know, it's just action anywhere. It is. I'm on 12. You're on 14. A really good start to the season on that front. And let's hope that stays tight for the rest of the season as well.
Now, we always know you've got final thoughts.
Yeah, I'm going to...
What's on the agenda this week?
Tyres, I've discussed to them blue in the face. They're rubbish. It won't change now because it won't change during the season, but it's got to be looked at for next year because it don't work. It doesn't work. I think even if you asked Alan Gow in a quiet room, he might silently sort of nod his head and say it's not worked. Maybe not, but... Yeah, so I'm not going to get excited about that. I'm actually going to ask you an interesting question for my final thoughts.
Okay.
Is that Ingram put out a sort of a racing debrief
last night
about the weekend.
He sent that to me.
And I sent it to you, and this is what I'm going to ask you now, what I asked you last night. He seemed down on that. Now, do you think that was genuinely down or slightly overacting?
I think there was a little bit of acting. I think it's the feeling of getting to the midway point of the season, especially in the touring cars, where we get this month break or so. Mm. It's that feeling of almost like sinking, going, right, that's the first half of the season done. Not quite where I wanted to be. I probably wanted to be in the lead of the championship. And Sutton's got possibly a little bit lucky this weekend with tyre choice.
I'm going to combat that slightly.
It's a bit of a risk.
Yep. I'm going to combat that slightly by saying I think that he will be quite down, because I think that by all accounts, and you disagree with this, but everyone else, including Edwards, O'Neill, Harvey, agree with me,
okay,
that Hyundai is heads and shoulders above the rest of the field. It's so good. It's so good. He's not on top. And this weekend in particular, he's gone out. He's smashed the qualifier on that record.
Yeah.
He's won race one very comfortably indeed.
Yeah.
And Sutton has still outscored him this weekend.
Yes.
I think that is going to really eat away at him.
And that is kind of why I think I could quite easily find statistics to go, actually, the Ford is well on par, if not performing better.
Yes, but problem with that, that would require you to do some research, which is not... I mean,
I've got a whole month to do it.
I look forward to you bringing that. But certainly, stats only tell you so much. That car is good at everything. And it's so quick in a straight line as well. And so this weekend in particular, even if you say that the Ford is a bit closer than you think, this was a Hyundai circuit.
Mm.
And it was shaping up to be a really good weekend. This is a good weekend. He took a first, a fourth, and a fourth. It's not a bad weekend. But
not a bad weekend at all.
But Sutton has still outscored him. And I think that is going to be
I do think part of that is down to the risk, the call that Sutton went for, to go, okay, I'm going to drop back to fourth, and then I'm going to make the most of, hopefully, the weather conditions, which he did.
Yeah, but then do you give credit to Sutton for saying sometimes the more aggressive strategy? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you play pool, you always go for a shot. No matter what it is, you always try and make the pot. And you always tell me off if I play too conservatively because you say it doesn't win you games. So you can make the same argument here.
There are lots of different factors this weekend, I think. If he's looking across the first five rounds of the season, I think if you'd have gave him this at the start of the season, I think he'd go, yeah, okay, I'm still well in it going forward. But as you say, that car is performing extremely well. And we looked at this, actually, talking about it yesterday. What tracks are left? Who's it going to support more or be more beneficial towards? And we still do think it will be Ingram that the tracks will benefit, but we both said Sutton's going to win it.
Yeah, because this weekend's like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts? Or questions or comments?
It was actually quite enjoyable sitting down in some normal temperature weather yesterday.
Yes, it was. Yes, yeah.
I must say, even when the rain came, it didn't really dampen the spirits. It made for a good, interesting final race. I always love those races that go from the wet to the dry or the dry to the wet conditions because it really sorts the men from the boys and you get the cream of the crop rising to the top.
Any more cliches or anything in there?
I think it's a good opportunity midway through the season for everyone to reassess where they are, reassess what the targets are and what the aims are for the second half of the season. Some more than others, Toyota and Hyundai and Ford.
The only reason I'm laughing is because you say all that and I agree with you, but it's a two-horse race. It's done. It's Ingram or Sutton. No one else is winning it.
I don't think anyone else will come close. I think the BMWs are well off the pace.
Agreed.
And the best that they can hope for going forward is now to get Hill to finish third in the championship.
That's a stretch at the minute.
They've got a lot of work to do behind the scenes. But yeah, let us know your thoughts and feelings on where teams are, where drivers are halfway through the season, and who you think will eventually come out on top.
And if you want any help with that, we will be releasing our mid-season driver grades during the summer. We've also got some 10-minute driver profiles. We've got a few other bits and pieces that we're looking at working on as well, including a bit more of some like thought pieces, etc.
And we will now have the mid-season update of the alternate championship table.
I mean, if that doesn't get you subscribed to YouTube, nothing will. I think that pretty much sums up the Auto Park week weekend. Obviously, we are heading to a summer break. There will be plenty of content on this channel to keep you going through the summer. We say it all the time, keep subscribing, keep liking, keep commenting. It helps push us up the algorithms and it keeps us motivated as much as anything else.
Yeah, thanks for everyone that subscribed so far. We've surpassed 200 subscribers on YouTube now and we're thankful for every one of you.
Until we speak again, as Vera Lynn nearly sang.
Oh dear.
I'll steal your line to get me out of this. Stay safe and we'll speak to you soon.